You're about to listen to a talk given at the Center for Spiritual Living Midtown at the beautiful Academy of Medicine in Atlanta, Georgia. If you want more information on our center, please see our Facebook page or our website. Thanks for listening. I hope these words of wisdom make a positive difference in your life.
Oh, thank you, Peter.
Such talent. Isn't that amazing? We all have such different talents, too. Whenever I stop to think about it, I'm fairly pleased with my life thus far. I've got a wonderful home, a loving, fabulous wife whom I adore. I've got some very good friends. My health is good. I've got a little money in the bank, and I've seen a lot of the world. Not bad, all in all. Now, just like everybody else, I have made some mistakes along the way, some of them doozies, but I've gotten over them thanks to what I have learned in this teaching over the last 30 years or so. So I'm comfortable knowing now that I did the very best I could considering what I understood about life at the time, considering what my consciousness was back then. Okay, I mean, it's all a learning experience anyway. It's all about raising our consciousness as we go through experiences and getting a broader and deeper understanding of life. But instead, as I look at my life, the things that I regret the most are not the things that I did, but the things that I didn't do that I really wish I had done. Everybody understand what that means? Looking back, you've probably got a few of those things in your own past. Now, some of the things I didn't do because I was afraid at the time. I'll admit that. And there were other things in my life that I didn't do that I wish I had because somebody told me I wasn't supposed to, and I followed orders. And then there were those things that I intended to do, but kept putting them off until it was too late. Now, these thoughts don't consume me. I don't go there anymore with my where my mind is now. But they certainly make me think about how I live my life today, every day in the moment, as Peter was just singing about. So in that respect, they were also a good learning experience. Now, on occasion, we have all been touched, whether in movies or some great movies out on the internet, reading stories, whatever. We've been touched by stories of people who were on their deathbed who talked until their last breath about things in life that they wish they had done. And it's a very sad thing to die regretting your life. Now, some of the people who were in that situation, who lived very limited, boring lives, wished that they had done more big and exciting things, while other people who had been living in the fast lane, doing all these big, exciting things, traveling, making money, all that kind of stuff, wished they had stopped and slowed down more to smell the roses. So there's no right or wrong answer. There's no right or wrong way to live. That's not the question. It's a question of knowing what is important to us. It's a question of living according to our own dreams and our own desires rather than limiting how much we enjoy life because of some person or some situation that happens to be outside of us. Now, we all do this occasionally to a certain extent. I mean, we may decide some days when we're a little tired or whatever to sit in a chair and just stare at the television and go a little brain dead instead of taking the dog to a park on a nice windy, rainy day that would have been really beautiful. Or we may decide that we can't afford the time to go to the beach this year because things are so busy at work, but maybe next year we'll manage. For all sorts of reasons that seem perfectly logical at the time, we find ourselves practicing what is called the deadly art of non-living. That's the title of my talk today. And I will tell you right up front, I stole that title, okay? I actually stole it from the title of a chapter of a book, a marvelous book that I've had for many years called A Touch of Wonder. If I know some of you are looking for books to read, this one I highly recommend. And it's written by a man named Arthur Gordon. And I love the subject matter of this chapter because it talks about how so many people go through life just trying to get by instead of living each day, each hour, and each moment as the precious gift that it is. Now, when I use the term non-living, Keith was saying, what does non-living mean? Okay, let's talk about it. When I use the term non-living, I'm not talking about being dead. At least not physically dead, okay? I'm talking about the way that a lot of people go through life in this abundant world without enjoying the emotional and physical and even spiritual pleasures that are always open to us. Now, a lot of you know we got a lot of theater people here. We are in Midtown. And remember Auntie Mame, the plays, some of you? In the original play, Rosalind Russell played the part. And she had a line in that play. It's been moved around and changed around a little. But the actual line from the original stage play was her saying, "Life is a banquet and most poor sons of bitches are starving to death." That was the line from the play. Now, it's been changed to "most poor fools," but the real line in the play was SOBs. Now, that was a woman in the play, if you see it, who knew what she was talking about. She was an expert on the subject of living well because she was a person who refused to starve herself at what she saw as the banquet of life. So I love the term non-living because it is so perfectly descriptive. Non-living is what we're doing when we are responding to the world's rules and the world's expectations rather than responding to the music of our own heart. Non-living is what we are doing when we agree, either consciously or unconsciously, to live someone else's life as more important than our own. Non-living is what we're doing when we procrastinate, when we put off that Alaska cruise for still another year, or when we are afraid to tell someone that we love them because it might complicate the relationship. That's all non-living. Non-living is when we are going through life on autopilot, just looking for the right rules to follow, rather than allowing life to spontaneously explode out of us into the world, rather than acting like the inspired spiritual beings that we truly are. Now, the reason so many people in the world live this way is because of the illusion, and it is an illusion, make no mistake, that this is the safest way to live. The reason that there are so many people walking around imitating other people instead of expressing themselves, okay, keeping their feelings inside, so many people doing that, people trying not to rock society's boat, is because of the general belief that this is a dangerous world and the only way to avoid getting hurt is to not do anything too outrageous, not do anything that'll get us criticized, not to do anything that will get us noticed. What we don't realize when we're doing this, and all of us have done it at times, okay, as someone once said, is that especially in our spiritual life, and when I say spiritual life, it's all spiritual. There isn't a physical life and a spiritual life. It is all spiritual, okay? Someone once said, safety is the most unsafe spiritual path that we can follow. Safety is the most unsafe spiritual path that we can take. The truth is, by trying to be safe all the time, we give up far more than we gain. Now, being safe does do some things that a lot of people think are good. Being safe helps us fit into society, but it's also a surefire way to wake up one day on your deathbed with a whole pile of regrets. You see, what most people don't understand, if you go out and talk to people on the street, the main preoccupation of society is not to support us in growing or in living well. The main preoccupation of society is to make everyone fit in. That's the purpose of society. The race consciousness, the race mind that fills the world, not just in this city or this state or this country, but everywhere in the world, wants us all to act the same, to think the same, to feel the same, and to be the same. Not exactly the same, but at least in a way that won't make us stand out. The conventional wisdom, which is definitely conventional but not very wise, okay, tells us that change is disruptive and conformity is good. That's what the world tells us every single day. The funny thing is, if society were actually successful at doing this for every single person in the society, the world would never grow into something greater. The world would never change. Civilization would never advance. We'd never evolve as a race. You see, all these fantastic technological and scientific and social improvements that we have enjoyed throughout the years are not a result of society. They occur in spite of it. They're not a result. They occur in spite of it. All growth occurs in the world because of those people who are so obsessed with living, with actual living, so obsessed with expressing life as an extension of the consciousness that they have within them, that they will do whatever it takes to make their dreams a reality. To make their dreams a reality. They're not doing it to help the world. They're not even doing it to get rich in most cases. That's just a nice byproduct. They're doing it because they can't not do it. They're doing it because they have to. Now, one person who did this is a wonderful example, is a woman I highly admire, by the name of Helen Keller. Everyone familiar with her, obviously. And she once wrote, "One can never consent to crawl when one feels the impulse to soar." This is a woman deaf and blind, almost from birth. "One can never consent to crawl when one feels the impulse to soar." To soar. Now, that impulse to soar should be our natural state, okay? Because that impulse to soar that she's talking about is actually the power of God, or the power of life, if you don't like the G word, ready to move through us as soon as we are ready to recognize it and to use it. We have to do those things. We have to recognize it and to use it. The art of non-living, on the other hand, is a learned habit. It's a learned habit, and it's one that we would do very well to unlearn, and this is actually a great place to do just that. I mean, we all know that the world prefers to live cautiously. Talk to the people in your office, talk to people out there, you know, the world prefers to live cautiously. Giving the opportunity, when faced with an uncomfortable or an unfamiliar situation, most people in the world would prefer to observe, at least for a little while, and sort of get the lay of the land, rather than act. Most people would rather walk around an incident than get involved. They'd rather let someone else do whatever it is that needs to be done, while they just offer a few anonymous suggestions from the peanut gallery over here on the side. Now, this obviously starts in childhood. I mean, it's funny, even though as children, once we start come out and start being able to move around and do stuff, the joy and excitement of being alive just explodes out of us at every opportunity. And if you don't believe me, just go sit and watch a playground for a little while. These kids are just exploding. They're so excited to just run and be around. But while they are doing that, once they reach a certain age, which is not very much, 3, 4, 5, the adults and the authority figures in their life start pushing it down. Quit talking so fast. Lower your voice. You know, that's quit talking fast never worked for me. I didn't catch that one, okay? Lower your voice. Stop running in the house. Stop being so exuberant, okay? Grow up. Grow up. That's the message that we receive. We are taught from a very early age to avoid traffic, to avoid strangers, to avoid cold weather or you'll catch a cold. We're taught to be afraid of unspecified dangers that might show up when we least expect it. Now, I've shared some years ago, I've done it a couple times, some of you may remember, when I was growing up, every time I left the house, my mother's last words to me, before I walked out and went to the grocery store, or before I left and went to Vietnam, it was all the same, her last words to me as I left were always, "Be careful." As she still does it now. You know, I woke up, "Mom, I'm going to go down and pick up a six-pack of beer." Okay, be careful. Okay, that's all. Those were her last words. And it wasn't until many years later that I realized why that bothered me. Because it's hard to be excited about life when you're being careful. When you're being careful. Our problem is, as we get older, we keep learning about more and more things that can hurt us or embarrass us or make life more difficult. That's what we keep picking up from everywhere around us. And eventually, we start hearing those voices in our ear, those cautionary voices saying, my mother's voice saying, "Be careful." We hear it in our own mind, those logical, well-behaved voices that tell us to follow the rules and not be different. Angela, she's not here this morning, but she's going to be doing a Saturday workshop, a week from this coming Saturday, on Don Miguel Ruiz's book, The Four Agreements. How many of you read that book? Excellent book, okay? Always good to go back and reread it. But he calls this point where we start to hear our own voice telling us to be careful, the domestication of humans. You remember that from the book? We are being domesticated. Isn't that great? The domestication of humans. But eventually, society doesn't have to domesticate us. Society doesn't have to limit our ability to live joyfully and spontaneously because we learn to limit ourselves. We learn to limit ourselves. We become auto-domesticated, phrase I just made up, okay? We allow ourselves to be restricted by feelings like guilt or shame and embarrassment and all those things. The sad thing is we don't even see that our freedom to express life is restricted because our limitations are so familiar to us. They become so familiar to us. It's like a fish that can't see the water that it's swimming in because it's been there all the time. And we will go to unbelievable lengths to defend our limited beliefs. We really will. Dr. Raymond Charles Barker, my teacher's teacher, he used to say, we argue in favor of our limitations and they become ours. We argue in favor of our limitations. In spite of what they're doing to us, in spite of what they are doing to keep us from living a richer and fuller life. Now, have you ever noticed how much energy we waste, or people around us, if it's not us, trying to keep our life from changing? Trying to keep our life from changing. We're sort of like a guided missile, you know, or the space shuttle when it's taking off. When a missile takes off, if you're watching it, I've seen a space shuttle launch. It's great. It looks like it goes straight right where it's supposed to go, and everything's great. But what's really happening is the desired track of the missile has been programmed into the computer, okay? And as soon as it takes off, there's a gyro in the nose of the missile that knows if it's right on that predetermined track. If it starts to go off track even a little bit, the computer says, no, 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 you're not supposed to be there, and it changes, it sends a signal down to the rockets underneath, and they shift so it goes back to track. So it cannot get off the predetermined path, okay? Now, if you're a guided missile, that's not a bad thing. But for a human being, if it is a predetermined track we're on that somebody else determined way back when, now we've got a problem, okay? Because if we start to think or to act outside being careful, like my mother told me, or what our teachers taught us, or what society tries to tell us, all sorts of alarms go off in our mind that say, don't go there, don't go off track, get back where you're supposed to be. That's why change feels so painful and so difficult and disorienting. And that's why if we want to grow, we have to change our programming. We have to change the program that has been placed into our mind. We have to change our beliefs if we want ourselves to be able to change direction. Now, non-living can take a lot of different forms, all of them potentially deadly to our spiritual well-being. It can take the form of fear, or indifference, or boredom, apathy, inattention, self-righteousness. That's another way that we keep ourselves locked in. Any one of these can cause us to withdraw into our own little controlled corner of the world and cause us to miss out on all sorts of incredible things that the world has to offer. For example, let's not get into the physical type fears. Let's talk about how fear can affect the way that we express love. Okay? Now, we are very careful about where we express love and how we express it. Would you admit that? Okay, we're very, very careful about that. We love our family, we love our friends, we love our cat or our dog or both, but we don't think about love in terms of the rest of the world because that could be dangerous. All right. If we start loving the whole world, or so it goes in our mind, the next thing you know, they're going to want us to get involved. And then they're going to want us to start helping people. And God knows I don't have the time and the money to get involved. Besides, I got my own problems. I'd like to help, but I'm only one person. What can I do? And blah, 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 blah. That's where we draw the line. When we think like this, what we're really doing is we're trying to separate our life from the rest of life. That's really what we're doing. And we can't do that because it doesn't work that way. We can't ignore the rest of life while trying to make something of our own. Just like we can never be separated from a power that created us and flows through us, we can never be separated from the power of life as it expresses all around us. Okay? There's a man by the name of Edward Hale. A number of years, he wrote an affirmation. So this is a great affirmation to use. You can go back and listen to it if you want to write it down later. And some of you have heard it before, but he said, there's nothing, whenever you feel like there's nothing I can do, try this. He says, I am only one, but I am one. I cannot do everything, but I can do something. And because I cannot do everything, I will do what I can. And then see how powerful one person can be. Whatever you're involved in, it doesn't really matter, okay? There's a fundamental spiritual law at work, and that law says that life will only give back to us what we give to life, all right? Now, we could use a sports analogy. I always like the one you can't steal home with your foot on third. That's kind of a cute one. Or, you know, if you stand on the sidelines, you'll never get hurt, but you'll never score a touchdown. All these sports analogies. But here's a better analogy I thought of. Think of it as a trip to the islands, to the Cayman Islands. Anybody been there? Pretty place, okay? Now, you get there, and you want to see what's under the water, because you're on a beautiful island, whatever. So you can rent or pay a ticket and go on a glass-bottom boat and stay really dry, okay? And you can look through the bottom. You can lean over the rail and look down through the glass, and you can see the fish and the coral reefs and the colors, and it's very nice. Or you can go down to a little shack and rent a snorkel and some flippers and actually go out on the water and be looking through the water and maybe dive down a little bit and see it, and it's a lot prettier that way. Or you can go to another shack and you can rent a scuba tank, and you can go all the way down, and you can swim underneath the coral reefs, and you can pet the fishes, and you can do all that stuff. That's what we're talking about when we talk about levels of living. That's the difference between living and non-living. Now, that's also, coincidentally, the key to transforming our life. Okay, that's the difference between just being alive and really living. When we participate in more of life than just the tiny portion that we are in at the moment, we start to see that we are more than just a single being with limited time and limited energy. We start to feel a connection. We start to feel a connection to all the power and all the energy that life has to offer. We start to feel excited about what we can do. And we stop being so obsessed with all the little annoyances that seem to push us back into our little box. And that's when we start to feel, it's a great word, enthusiastic. Enthusiastic about life. You know where the word enthusiasm comes from? It comes from the Greek entheos. The word en and theos, which means God within. Theos being God. It means God within. So when our involvement with the world changes from obligation and limitation to jubilation and inspiration, okay, from obligation and limitation to jubilation and inspiration, our whole energy expands into a larger version of life. And when that happens, our relationships become more meaningful and sincere. We start to feel enthusiastic about the places where we put our energy, whether it's at work or in a charity we're involved in, or this center, like our volunteers do, where we put our time and where we put our money. We start to understand the joyful experience that living can be, because now we're living consciously instead of living automatically. Okay? You see, we keep looking for something to help us enjoy life more. But there's really nothing to look for, and there's nothing to find. Life is what we are. Living is the way we express what we are. So this power we call God didn't create us just so it could be alive. It created us so that it could express life creatively by means of us. That's what we believe about God. We're told, those who were raised in a Bible, Christian Bible type family, that the teacher Jesus once said, "I have come so you might have life and have it more abundantly." Remember that statement? A few of you had to memorize it. Okay? I believe he was telling us that once we understand the power of life that works through all of us, we can see that we're all capable of creating a life that's filled with abundance and joy and prosperity and all those good things. Because we are spiritually designed to live that way. We have been designed mentally, emotionally, physically, and spiritually to live that way. We are not designed to anesthetize ourselves with drugs or sex or work or television or the internet. We are meant to express life in ways that bring us joy. Now, we don't have to get anything to do that. Instead, we have to lose something. We have to lose something. We have to lose our belief in the power of limitation. We have to lose our belief in the power of limitation. We have to lose all that early programming that tells us that how we should live and how we should behave, okay? We have to lose our dependence on outside experiences and other people to make us happy. We have to lose all those things. We have to remind ourselves where the power of life lies, which is in our consciousness, which is one with the greater consciousness, and what it's there for. We need to know that living really living, not non-living, is an integral part of our nature. Okay? Now, it's not hard to do because there's something inside of us that recognizes when we are really being alive. And we can feel it when we're using it. Those few rare instances where we feel so excited about just being alive, we can feel it. It's that when you go snow skiing, it's that first push off the top of the mountain when all of a sudden you're sort of weightless and you feel like you can fly. It's like one year I went and climbed Stone Mountain at sunrise all by myself. An amazing feeling of living. It's like being on the Scream Machine at Six Flags with your kids or somebody else's kids, you know. That's where you start to feel a little scared, a little out of control, and really, really alive. It could be writing an anonymous check to the Atlanta Union Mission that'll feed 100 people on Christmas Day. Or it can be waking up in the morning and looking into the eyes of someone you love and have them look back at you the exact same way. All of that is a feeling. That's what it means to be living instead of non-living. Now, I want to close, because she says it better than I could, with a letter written by a woman named Irma Bombeck. Everybody remember Irma? Brilliant, funny. She died almost 20 years ago, believe it or not, at the age of 69, still very young. And you may have heard this poem, but in the light of what I've been talking about, I'd like you to absorb it differently. And it's a letter, whatever, and it's called If I Had My Life to Live Over. Anybody heard this or remember it? Great. If you want, you don't have to, but close your eyes and just sort of take what she's saying here. And she knew she was terminal when she wrote this. She said, "If I had my life to live over, I would have talked less and listened more. I would have burned the pink candle sculpted like a rose before it melted in storage. I would have invited friends over to dinner, even if the carpet was stained or the sofa was faded. I would have eaten the popcorn in the good living room and worried much less about the dirt when someone wanted to light a fire in the fireplace. I would have taken the time to listen to my grandfather ramble about his youth. I would have sat on the lawn with my children and not worried about grass stains. I would have cried and laughed less while watching television and more while watching life. I never would have bought anything just because it was practical, wouldn't show dirt, or was guaranteed to last a lifetime. When my kids kissed me impetuously, I would never have said, 'Later, now go get washed up for dinner.' There would have been more 'I love yous,' more 'I'm sorry's,' but mostly, given another shot at life, I would seize every minute, look at it and really see it, live it, and never give it back." Isn't that great? And never give it back. What she's saying is, stop sweating the small stuff. Okay? What's that they say? Don't sweat the petty stuff and don't pet the sweaty stuff. Okay, that's what it is. All right? Stop worrying about who likes you and who doesn't like you. Stop worrying about who has more and who has less. Stop worrying about who's doing what. Life is too short to let it pass you by. That's really what her message was. We need to express our life every moment of every day at a level deep enough to move our spirit, to actually open up and touch and move our spirit, at a level deep enough to open up our connection not only with God, the way a lot of people think of God, but with everything around us, which is really what God is. Once we do that, once we make that connection, once we start to use this power that we have, and we start to see how it changes the way our whole life works and how it changes the way that we move through the world on a daily basis, we're never going to be able to go back into our shell again. That's the good thing. Once you get out, you are out for good. We'll never be able to go back into our shell. We'll never be able to stand on the sidelines again because we'll finally be living life the way that it's meant to live. And once we start, we'll know that we're on the right path. This is the truth in your life. And this is the truth in mine. And so it is. And so it is. Great. Thank you. All right. Thank you. Okay. Let's just take a breath, take a moment or two. Take these ideas, take the ones that resonated with you, those that touched you, either positively or negatively. Just take a moment, set aside the other ideas, and let's know this. I know that life is an amazing experience, and I'm right smack dab in the middle of it. I know that all the small, limited things that I get caught up in, the routines, the ruts, the mundane, everyday, automatic, without thinking about it, that all of this is a waste of an incredible spiritual power that is expressing itself by means of me. I know that by opening my eyes and truly seeing what is around me, by opening my ears and hearing things like laughter and all the many noises in the world, I know that by breathing deeply the scent of the good and the bad, the flowers and the garbage, everything that exists, that I expand not the world, because the world is just the world, but I expand my awareness of who and what I am. And as I begin to do this, I realize that the part of me that is more than my physical body, the part of me that is more than my physical senses, is what allows this physical body to take in so much of this world and to place it in that divine center, in that consciousness that is me, and allows me to express life in greater and greater ways. As I begin to do this, I start to love deeper. I start to play with more abandon. I start to laugh louder. I start to walk away from things that do not serve me, that do not feed me, and I walk towards those who need my help and help lift them up so that we can both live life at a higher level. All of this is the power that I have. There is always a way to do whatever I need to do. There is always a way for me to move away from that which does not serve me and does not help me to live better. And as I recognize this, the fear falls away. The anger disappears. The little annoyances become just something to laugh at, and I am in the world in a different way. I am in the world in a way where I pay attention to what is important, and I smile at the rest and let it just wash over me. This is the power and the strength I have to make this decision consciously and to allow myself to emerge from the limited self that I have been in the past. As I recognize this, I give thanks. I simply give thanks for this awareness of who and what I am and who and what the world is. I give thanks for the opportunity to express God, to express Spirit in every way, every day. And I give thanks for this beautiful world that surrounds me. This is my truth. I accept it now. I embrace it. And I release this awareness into consciousness, letting it expand and change my life in all the best possible ways from this moment on. And so it is.